Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace, and this episode is a special episode. I'm going to be talking with a comic creator who has a book coming out this Friday. I'm sorry, this Wednesday, rather. And I got a chance to read the first couple issues, and I'm very excited. It's a really, really great book. So it's my pleasure to
welcome
to the show, Van Jensen. How you doing, Van?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, my pleasure, man. For those of our listeners who are not familiar with your work, give us a quick rundown. What are some of the things that you've worked on in the past that they may have read?
So I kind of first came into comics in 2009 when the first Pinocchio Vampire Slayer graphic novel was released. And that ended up being a trilogy of graphic novels that's now collected as an omnibus through Top Shelf IDW. And then that got me in the door at DC Comics. So I spent a couple of years writing Green Lantern Corps, a couple of years writing Flash. Pretty recently ended my run on The Flash. And then now I'm working on a new $6 Million Man series for Dynamite. And then Cryptocracy, which is a new creator-owned series from Dark Horse.
Yeah, that's the book that's coming out this Wednesday that I wanna talk about with you. But before we do that, first of all, I know what a huge basketball fan you are. So what were your thoughts on the NBA Finals? What did you think?
It was a great finals. I mean, it was kind of a nice position to be in where I was a big Sonics fan, so I don't really have a team to root for anymore. There are a few teams that I don't like. every once in a while there will be a finals where it's like there's a team that I'm really rooting against. Where this finals, I was happy either way, depending on who won. I was just mostly wanting to see some really good basketball. And it was a great finals. I mean, some really epic plays and an incredible comeback by the Cavs. And I got to see LeBron James play in person for the first time during the playoffs. And so, just to see him really will his team to beating, statistically one of the greatest teams of all time was pretty amazing. So, yeah, all in all, a heck of a year for the NBA.
Yeah, now do you buy into, because I heard, and probably this is mostly sour grapes from Golden State fans, you buy into any of the whole conspiracy the NBA wanted to go seven games, they could sell more advertising, they wanted LeBron to have a championship, buy into that at all? You think any truth at all to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would think by this point that I think the NBA is pretty savvy and that they know that it's really hard to keep stuff like that under wraps. So, if there was any effort like that, it's like if it comes to light, the potential damage of that is so much greater than the potential benefit of a seven game series. So I would have to list myself as a skeptic of that particular conspiracy.
All right, fair enough. But part of the reason I asked you is because that leads directly into the book we're going to talk about, which is Cryptocracy. Why don't you tell our listeners a little about what Cryptocracy is all about and why I would be thinking along those lines of conspiracy?
Yeah, so this is a book that's been really in development for kind of a long time. I had the initial concept quite a while ago and then was just kind of, while I was writing for DC, I was still working full time and kind of didn't have time for a while to return to creator-owned comics. So it just sort of sat on a shelf for a while. But the basic concept, there are all these stories, movies, TV shows, books out there where there's this like secret shadowy organization that's behind the scenes, controlling everything. It's the Freemasons or the Illuminati or the Octopus, or there are all these different supposed groups out there, the Bilderbergs, and in fiction they're always just sort of very generically painted as bad guys, like they're this dark shadowy force and you never really learn much about them other than the fact that they're bad. So at some point I just thought, you know, what if we actually saw the story from their side? Like, what would motivate an organization to try to control the world in that way? Like, how would they go about doing it? And, you know, what are the different agendas that they have? And also, like, what are the challenges of what they do? And in general, just what would that world look like? And so Cryptocracy is this story that imagines that there are these nine families that control the entire world, and they're sort of, you know, one level deeper than the deepest conspiracy, really controlling everything. And the story is told from the perspective of Graham, who is an agent for the family that controls America. And, you know, he's someone who has to make decisions about, you know, the rise and fall of nations. And it's the kind of stuff where, you know, if you control the world, like, you have to make decisions that potentially could cost thousands of lives in order to save millions of lives. So, you know, from the perspective of one of the millions of people who live, maybe you're a good guy, but from the perspective of one of the thousands of people who died, you're a bad guy. So, you know, it's just kind of like taking something that had been very black and white and reimagining it with a lot of shades of gray.
And so this idea originally you had, and has it grown? I mean, it's a huge idea when you think about it. I mean, you could tell stories for a long time going back and looking at, you know, real world events, you know, things that have happened in history. And I mean, there's plenty of things that you could look at in the past, and you could, you know, somebody who's paranoid, somebody who tends to think in terms of conspiracy. I mean, it's like a rich thing to mine, right?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of conspiracies, I mean, it goes basically back as far as, you know, civilization and history goes. And there are all kinds of great, you know, weird mysteries and different occult groups and, yeah, just all kinds of crazy stuff. And I mean, the hardest thing with the book was, like, you know, you have 22 pages a month, so figuring out how to, you know, not try to cram every single thing in there. But I did try to build it out as, like, this grand unified theory of conspiracies. So when I was first putting it together, I built out this, like, whole timeline of human history with an alternate timeline of, like, what the families were doing in these different time periods to shape, you know, the course of human history. So I would say I have an abundance of material to fall back on, you know, depending on how many issues this series ends up running.
Wow. If everything's collected, it'd be cool to see some of that back matter kind of as a bonus in, like, a trade or an omnibus. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'm thinking definitely we'll need, you know, it's tough because it's like part of it, some of it has, it's a lot of secrets that are,
right,
you know, kind of the culminating parts of the book.
Right.
I might have to, like, redact some of it before we,
or if you wait long enough till you have, you know, a lot of issues out where the secrets have been, you know, kind of spelled out. Let's talk a little bit about the nine families. Now, they're all named for planets in our solar system. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the idea that I had is that it's like you never quite know whether they're named for the nine planets, including Pluto, for the sake of having nine.
Right.
And the, you know, historical conception of what's a planet. So whether, you know, they're named for the planets or the planets are named for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I wanted to, you know, weave through the story a lot of that kind of ambiguity, to just, like, cast, because I don't know, I think that's sort of like the sense that I wanted to push throughout the whole book, is like this need to be very, you know, kind of questioning every piece of information. So the idea is these nine families are ancient, like they've been around longer than human history, and they use all kinds of different means and methods to control humanity, advanced technology. They also, there's this element of the book that all of these, cryptozoological creatures, that they do exist and that the families have sort of hidden them away from the world, but they use them for various purposes. So, these are incredibly powerful families, but they also, they are human and they are flawed in their way, and they sort of squabble with each other, which leads to, a lot of conflict and some of the core weaknesses with them.
What about the kind of the characteristics? We kind of have ideas in our mind of like Jupiter, for example, is like the big planet. You think of it as kind of a powerful name. Venus is kind of associated with love. Are we going to see any kind of the characteristics? Pluto that you mentioned, bounces back and forth. Is it really a planet? Is it really not? Seems to be kind of on the weaker side. Are we going to see those kind of characteristics play out in the families? Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, definitely. I really looked at, creating each family with very, elements to make them seem independent and seem very different. And again, it's like the characteristics that, we associate with those, sort of archetypal gods. Like, again, is it that the families are based on the gods, or is it that the gods are based on the families?
And you mentioned Graham. He is one of the main characters, and as you said, part of the family Mars, which is kind of in charge of running the U.S. Would you consider him the hero of the story, or is it more that he's kind of the protagonist and the point of view character?
I mean, to me, hero and protagonist are, not synonymous, but I guess I would certainly say I try to think of characters as protagonists rather than heroes. Like, I think hero is a little bit of an archetype, whereas protagonist, you're just really saying this is the central character of the mm-hmm. story. The story is told from this character's perspective. So yeah, and Graham is a very complicated character in that he, he's the guy who knows all the secrets. Like, he's the one who's behind the scenes controlling everything. So in actuality, like, life is kind of boring for him. Like, there are no mysteries because he's the one who's, pulling the wool over everyone's eyes. It's almost like, if we saw the X-Files from the perspective of the smoking man. And so, there are things that he does that are kind of bad and that seem amoral, but they're in service of the family. And then there are also flashes, I think, in the first couple of issues where you see that he's a little more complicated than that.
Is that something you're hoping to explore with the series, that this idea that depending on the perspective that you see an idea from, there's a lot of gray, I mean, yeah, there's definitely, black and white, right or wrong in the world, but especially now, the world we live in, there's so much gray area where it's hard to say without the benefit of, a lot of time passing and to give you the perspective to see if it was really the right choice or the wrong choice. Is that something that you want to explore with the series? Like, man, is this really the right thing to do? Is he making a bad choice?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think that, to me, that's where, writing becomes really interesting, is looking at characters where, there is no simple right answer. And that's just sort of reflective of life. Like, we're, none of us are, these simple archetypes. Like, we're all really complicated, and we're faced with situations all the time where, things are kind of conflicting. And like for Graham, like, one of the things that comes into play in the series is he's really disconnected in terms of humanity. Like, his only friend is a giant bugbear. So his only real tether to humanity is that he calls into this conspiracy themed radio show. And, like, he calls in to spread misinformation, but he's really calling in to try to, like, have some kind of human-to-human contact with someone. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I certainly look at it as trying to, you know, weave those things into the story as much as I possibly can.
Well, that raises another interesting thing that I noticed about the first couple issues. It's that here are these nine powerful families. We know from some of the things, like they apparently the elders are very long-lived. So we know there's something going on there where maybe they're a little more than human. But for the most part, they appear to be, you know, just like you or I. But they have all this power to kind of affect change and affect the way the path of the earth, you know, as far as humanity and society, they have the power to affect the path that those things are taking. But if you remove the human relationships, you know, they seem so far removed from society and above society and kind of looking down on everyone as kind of just like pieces on a plane board, or like we would look at ants, let's say. And so there isn't that connection, and then it makes you think, or it made me think anyway, like, so if they don't really understand what it is to be human because they don't have those relationships, then what really gives them the right to say what is best, right? And that's another thing I found very interesting about the first couple of issues.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you on that, like, if, you know, these are people who have ruled from on high for centuries, and so they are completely distant from, you know, the emotional reality of being human. And that's something that, like, very slowly we're going to see. Like, Graham is this very, you know, stiff, you know, by the book kind of guy. And that's something that's gradually going to change over the course of the series as he's kind of forced into a position of having to engage much more deeply with people and with the world. And I just think that that's something that is true. Like, you know, there are tons of psychological studies to prove that out. Like the study that was done where there was like a group of students who half of them became prisoners and half of them became guards, and you know, the ones who were guards just became awful. You know, there's nothing like power to really change people and change the way that they act towards others. And I think that's probably like the greatest challenge of being in power, is retaining, you know, empathy and compassion for the people under you.
Yeah, that's right. Was that Berkeley they did that, or Stanford? I remember reading about it. It's fascinating, that whole thing.
Yeah, it seems like it was one of those.
How long is the initial arc planned out for?
Six issues are in the can, and so that'll be the first arc. And it's a pretty big first arc. We kind of like looked at what we had talked about as like the first year and a half worth of stories, and decided to really push things forward into the first arc to kind of come out with a really big story. And so then, you know, the plan is to give Pete Woods, the artist, maybe a quick, you know, month or two break, and then come back with the next series. We haven't really decided whether, you know, we'll do like volumes where, you know, things come back with a new number one, or if we'll just continue the numbering. Six issues all set.
Cool. Now, you know, I'm a big fan of your work. You know, I read Green Lantern Green Lantern Corps. Green Lantern Corps. And, you know, I have the omnibus you talked about of the Pinocchio Vampire Slayer, which is amazing that you did with Dusty Higgins. I loved your Flash run. So clearly, you know, I'm a fan of yours. And when I heard you were doing this new book with Dark Horse, you know, immediately, you know, read the interviews you were given at the time, saw some of the promo art. When I got to read the two issues that you sent me, the advanced copies, I was taken aback by the art style that Pete is using. And not in a bad way. I really enjoyed what he did. It just wasn't what I expected. Some of the preview pieces that I saw kind of had a darker tone, you know, kind of shadowy, and being that what the story was about, you know, conspiracy and behind the scenes, I just kind of expected everything to be a little darker. And then when I got to read the issues, like the colors are bright, it's a very fantastical tale. His style is a little, you know, more on the animation side of things, and I was blown away. It really, to me, elevated the story and made it seem, I don't know, I was just worried it was going to be more of like kind of the Vertigo style things, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's just not my favorite kind of illustration. So how did you and Pete talk a lot about kind of the feel you wanted artistically, or was that all him? How did that collaboration work?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, Pete Woods is just an awesome, awesome artist. So, you know, it's I just felt so thrilled to get to connect with him on the book. I mean, he had done the Green Lantern Godhead one shot that I wrote. He did a chunk of that, which is how we first worked together. Mm-hmm. And I was in the midst of pitching Dark Horse at the time, and he and I got to talking, and he had just done something with Dark Horse, and he was like, oh yeah, you know, I really like Dark Horse, I would like to do more work there. And then he also mentioned that he was really into conspiracy theories. So, you know, I'm like sitting there like maniacally like, oh yes, I have just the thing for you, Pete. So he, you know, he read the outline and really, really responded to it. And then, you know, we sat down and talked about it. And I mean, my general philosophy is like, I just want to work with great artists who, you know, have fun and, you know, just like to do kind of big high adventure sort of stuff. And then any artist I work with, like, I just want to be as open as possible to, you know, give them the space to do whatever is really energizing to them creatively. So, you know, Pete's art was actually a big surprise to me too, because, you know, of course, I mean, he's been knocking out amazing art for like 20 years in the industry, although this is his first creator-owned book. But he decided that he wanted to color his own stuff, and this is just the second thing of his that he's ever colored. So, you know, when he asked me if I was okay with that, I was like, yeah, you know, of course, like, I trust you. I want you to do, you know, what you think is best for the book. And so he did some kind of test samples. And I mean, I had a few like minor notes, which really just went to like, I used to work in magazines, so I kind of know the difference between, you know, the way the color shows up on screen versus how it looks when it prints. So there were just like a few minor notes regarding very, you know, specific little things like that. But on the whole, you know, basically I just gave Pete the room to be awesome, and he was awesome. It's just kind of as simple as that.
Yeah, I guess talent shows through, right? I mean, I can't believe that he hasn't done more color. I'm surprised to hear you say that he hasn't colored his own stuff, because yeah, I was just blown away.
Yeah, and it, you know, he just gets better and better every single issue, and he's just doing really super cool, weird, fun things. Like the third issue, in the story, there's this place called the Preserve, which is hidden in China, and it's this giant walled off region that's like miles and miles and miles, with these huge walls around it, and it's where all of the cryptids in the world live. It's kind of like a sanctuary for them. And so the third issue takes place almost entirely inside the Preserve. So there's just, you know, like crazy monster creatures all over everywhere. And, you know, Pete just knocked out all of that in such amazing, amazing detail. You know, all I could do is just like sit there and gape at my screen as the pages came in.
Yeah, I think you said one thing about when you just wanted to give him the room. You said the word adventure, and I think that's probably the word that I was kind of searching for when I was describing my reaction to the you know, to the initial story when I got to read it, because like I said, I did expect kind of a darker tale, you know, more kind of sinister, because I hear that word conspiracy, and a lot of times that's kind of the connotation it has for me. But yeah, it really is like a fun adventure that we're being taken along with Graham as the things unfold, and you know, we see the antagonists show up, and there's kind of a mystery surrounding who that is, and how they have their power, and what it means for the future of the nine families. Yeah, it's almost like, okay, let's take this crazy conspiracy idea with these nine families and let's roll it up with some great art and throw in some like Indiana Jones style adventure, and here's what comes out, and it's awesome.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I just look at it as like there's a lot of kind of nasty, ugly, dark fiction in the world right now, and I mean there's a lot of it that I like a lot, but I don't know. I mean, I like writing stuff that's fun. Like, I think you can write stuff that's fun that is also serious and touches on serious elements, but I don't know, like, to me the world is a really fun, beautiful, weird place, and so that's like, that's the world that I want to put into my stories.
Yeah, it's great. I really hope that everybody out there who's listening goes out and picks the book up, tells their friends about it. Hopefully, it'll do well, and you'll get to keep telling stories in this world. Because as we mentioned, I think there's a lot of area to mine there. Now you have another creator-owned project coming up with Dark Horse, right? You want to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
So actually. just the, you know, kind of the way that the publishing world works. The editor who brought me in at Dark Horse, Jim Gibbons, he left and moved to another publisher. And so Nate Powell and I, Nate is the fantastic artist of the March graphic novels, among many others. he and I are doing this book called Too Dead. That's a true crime book. And Dark Horse, after Jim left, Dark Horse, we talked to them, and it, you know, it was very much a passion project for Jim. And we've actually, they released us from the contract so that we could take it somewhere else. They just didn't feel like they had an editor in hand that, you know, was the right person to handle it, which, you know, I give them a lot of credit for handling it in that way and being very, very respectful in their relationship with us. So Nate and I we're very deep in work on Too Dead. It's going to be a graphic novel, and it's a little too early to announce plans, but it'll be the general place where we're at right now is that it'll be out in 2017.
Okay, fair enough. And then as a freelance writer, you're always working on other things, always have ideas. Anything else you want to tell our listeners about, or anything else I should be, as a Van Jensen fan, that I should have on my radar to be on the lookout for?
Yeah, a few things. So with Dynamite, I'm doing a $6 Million Man series with Ron Solis. The first issue is actually out in a couple of weeks, I think. And I think it's maybe the first week of July or second week of July. Anyway, it's picking up off the TV show. And I mean, when they approached me about doing it, I basically said, like, if we can get a great artist and if I can have the freedom to be really, really weird with it, then, you know, I'm in. And they were game for that. So, like, the third issue, which I just wrote, is a chase that takes place across the top of a train, and all 22 pages are one panel. This is the length of the train.
That's awesome. Now, you're probably, I mean, because we're about the same age, so you're probably, we're a little too young for the $6 Million Man when it came out, but you probably saw reruns, right? Syndication.
Yeah, I think I kind of like knew it just as sort of like a big cultural touchstone. But I was born in 82, and I think it was like 77, 76, 77 when it went off the air. So it had been off the air for a little bit. And then I think it was a little bit later that I, you know, that I kind of started to watch some of it. And of course, now I've gone back and rewatched a lot, especially the first season. And it, you know, I spent a lot of time in journalism covering science and technology and kind of the interface of computing and biology, which is really fascinating to me just as a discipline. So it was something where I think I was able to bring in some kind of, you know, new modern knowledge and apply it to this older world. But yeah, I mean, I'm just having a lot of fun with it, trying to keep it, you know, very much in the spirit of the TV show. And of course, Ron Salas is an incredible, incredible artist. He's doing really cool stuff. So that should be a lot of fun. Let's see, I'm doing a digital series with the publisher Stila, with it's a reunion with Dusty Higgins. That'll be announced this summer, fall. Then let's see, there are two big work for hire projects that I'm doing that will be announced shortly that I should not reveal quite yet. Let's see, I just directed a movie. That's kind of new.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So yeah, I just decided that I felt like I wanted to try to make a foray into filmmaking. So there's a lot of people working in film in Atlanta, which is where I'm at. So I got connected to this really great team of guys who, you know, they worked on like the Avengers movies and The Walking Dead and all kinds of huge things. And they really pushed me to make the leap into directing. So I just did a short film that'll be on the festival circuit in, you know, maybe like the next like 6 months to a year.
Did you find that you had to get your head in a much different place, being that it wasn't, you know, for the page, static images, rather it was for, you know, moving images on the screen?
Yeah, it, oh man, it was so overwhelming. And it, you know, it wasn't like the biggest thing, but we had a 40 person crew and, you know, 6 person cast, I guess. And just, you know, it's such an intense world and, you know, so many different things going on all at once. And like, we built sets, so we're like assembling and disassembling sets and, you know, doing all these camera setups and then working with the actors. So, I mean, it was kind of like, it was all new. And the first day of shooting was my first day ever stepping foot on a film set. Wow. So, you know, we like got halfway through the first morning and then I was talking to the director of photography and I was like, wait, am I the guy who's supposed to say cut? He's like, yeah, that's kind of what the director is supposed to do. Like, these scenes have been dragging on like really long. And I was like, oh man, I wish somebody would have told me first thing this morning. Cause you know, I was just like, I don't have any idea what I'm doing. So yeah, it was super challenging, but I don't know. Ultimately, I feel like we put together something really cool, and I came away from it thinking that it would be something that I could possibly be, you know, good at. So yeah, I get this thing edited and all through the post process, and then I'm really just like sitting down and kind of like analyzing what worked, what didn't, where I need to grow, and take that to the next project.
Cool. That's really exciting. Have you ever met Heath Corson? He's a writer and he's directed things. Worked on a lot of DC animated stuff. He wrote the Bizarro 6-issue miniseries that came out last year.
Yeah. We met at one of the DC summits like a couple of years ago, I think. Heath is awesome. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's somebody that just recently at the Phoenix Comic Con, I sat down and interviewed him. And we talked a lot about the differences between for the page and for the screen. So I definitely recommend he's a brain you could pick as far as making that transition, going back and forth.
Yeah, they're from the people that I got to meet through DC, Heath is great, and has been super, super encouraging. And then Jeff King, who did Convergence and has directed a lot of TV over the years, he's another great guy
who's for sure
stepped in as a mentor of sorts. So Yeah, it's been, it's a very supportive community.
Yeah, I know Jeff as well. You're right. He's a really great guy. In fact, I met him, for the first time, I think at San Diego. And then I saw him later in the year at Long Beach Comic Con. And he brought with him a DVD of season one of Stargate, because he knew what a huge Stargate fan I am. And, you know, he worked on Stargate SG-1 season one. But he knew what a huge Stargate fan my wife was. And so he knew I was going to be at Long Beach. He brought along a copy of season one, SG-1, and had autographed it for my wife. Like, for Lois, thanks for being such a huge fan, whatever. Yeah, I love Jeff. He's a really great guy.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, and he's someone who's just like, has just worked his way up and has such an awesome story of, you know, kind of how he has built his career. I really respect that guy so much.
Yeah, it's definitely true in the comic community. It's such a small community. And even though sometimes, you know, people are submitting pitches for the same, you know, job, and so there is that little bit of you know, competition or whatever that goes on. Everybody's pulling for everybody, you know. Everybody just wants to see everybody else do well and put out great stories, whether it's for the screen or for the page, for the printed page. I think everybody just kind of pulls for everybody else to just, you know, put out good stuff. And, you know, we're all fans at heart, and so we just want there to be good stuff out there for all of us to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, there are a few very serious rivals that I have out there. You know, I've got my nemeses around the industry, but I'm kidding. I was trying to think, like, is there anyone? No.
I thought you were going to drop Rob's name.
Oh, yeah, Venditti. That guy. The worst.
Well, hey, man, I really want to thank you for joining me. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about Cryptocracy other than to get out there and pick it up on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you like the X-Files or anything kind of in that vein, it's definitely a book that you should check out. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it, and everyone for the support. It's always exciting and a little terrifying to put a new thing out into the world.
Oh man, it's my pleasure. You know, I'm a fan of your work, you know I am, but it really exceeded my expectations, man. It just blew me away. It just, you know, I found myself reading it and I was like literally smiling as I was reading it, because it was just so much fun. So you know, the only bad part about you letting me read the first two issues is now I have to wait so long before I get to read something new. But I'm definitely gonna be picking up the first issue on Wednesday, because it's a book that I want to have. You know, I want to have it in print so I can take it and have you autograph it for me and have it in my collection. It's a great book. So everybody out there listening, get out there, pick up the first issue on Wednesday. Add it to your pull list. Let your local comic shops know that this is a book you're going to want going forward, because nothing helps out books, especially creator-owned books, more than pre-ordering and letting your local comic shops know that it's something you want. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Remember, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com, where you can find all past episodes of our podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course our famous sketch gallery. Follow along on twitter.com/thecomicsource. That's the best place to find out when we put out new episodes and what's going on in the Comic Source world. You can also follow us on Facebook or Instagram. Those places are really good places to find out what conventions we're going to be at, to see pictures when we're at the conventions of cosplay and interviews we're doing, famous people we meet, all that stuff. So once again, I want to thank Van for joining me, and I want to thank everyone for listening. We'll talk to you next time.